You could have done the P-A-R-T. Why? Because I've gotta. You could have done that.
I could have. You're right. Yeah, I could have.
That
option was on the table.
Did you see my hand was so close to the on button that you knew you were like, I got to speed through this because otherwise he might do the Jim Carrey line?
I encourage you to do the Jim Carrey one.
Well, that's, you know what? Friendship. That's what we got going on here. I have a dilemma I did not know I was going to have on my hands here that we're going to have to get to at some point before the end of the show.
Okay.
You learn something about people you love every day. It's not always things you want to learn. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, deep tease, right? Yeah, that was...
Sounds deep.
That was existential, huh?
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Joe Varden coming up in about 20 minutes here. But the lead brought to you by Slater and Zers. Experience you need, results you want. Eric Enholm joined us at the top of the 3 o'clock hour to break down the Browns' schedule. Cleveland with no primetime games and a gauntlet to begin the year. Here's what he said about the first stretch of games for Cleveland.
You know, I always look at the first handful of games of every team and say, are we looking at 5-0 or 0-5 or somewhere in between, you know? And that's kind of the toughest part with Cleveland, I would say, is getting off to a good start is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, it seems like it's really hard to find wins. You know, I was accused of being a homer, which I think is a wild accusation when you say 6 wins.
Yeah, the Peterlin pander, as it's known.
It's very nice. Again, I've been searching for this zone for about a decade now to be considered the homer, especially between really anybody else at the station. And so I like that we found this comfort zone.
JP is home.
I might just live in it for a little bit, if we're being honest. Wild, though, how if you think this team is going to start 0-5, which I definitely think is more than on the table, where you find the other wins.
Yeah, like, you can kind of dice this thing up how you want it. If you think that it's... There's a part of me that does subscribe to the belief system of the early season is so wonky and teams are still coming together that if it might look tough on paper, and then you get in and those teams aren't quite ready to be who they are. So maybe having the bulk of your toughest games early gives you a chance to sneak a couple wins. At the same point, there are a few scenarios in which I think Kevin Stefanski ends up getting in hot seat territory in season. And if, let's say, you're one of the teams that aren't ready to play early in the season, I just think it's under-talked about. And I know the players are going to say things differently, but you're coming off a 3-win season. I think Kevin's in a precarious situation in that locker room, meaning he's not walking into a precarious situation, but if they start the season 1-5 or 0-6, which is how that schedule looks like it could happen, you're going to get into some quicksand there really easy, and it's going to be tough to get the kind of positive momentum you need, even if you get a couple easy games in the middle of the season with the Jets and the Titans.
Well, and if you're Stefanski, you got to be thinking, man, I couldn't catch a break here. That's as tough as you're going to find. He probably was up last night being like, you couldn't have had me open with the Titans into the Jets, into the Raiders, and let me take just a lazy river ride before I just get slaughtered with these opponents?
And I do think, you can't control the dance card. You gotta take them as they come. But, like, listen, if you go out there and go 3-3 in those first 6 games, we're going to have some hope. That's going to jumpstart some hope. I don't know we should go into the season saying that's what will happen.
Well, yeah, because if you go 3-3, that means you've beaten, out of the 6 games to start off, if Aaron Rodgers is with the Steelers, you go through Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love, Jared Goff, into J.J. McCarthy, which is, that's a mixed bag, that's a grab bag, that's a 15-win team from last year, and then into Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is 5 respectable to great quarterbacks that you're playing.
It is. Tough. It's funny you mention Minnesota. I was listening to WIP, and John Ritchie, former NFL linebacker.
I like him. He's the one that did the show with Artie Lang for so many years.
He is
the overnight show that I talk about every now and again.
We appreciate him, but he said he referred to Kevin O'Connell as an up-and-comer, and I'm like, 13 wins. He's had 13 win in a 14-win season in 2 of his first 3 seasons.
Yeah, all he's done is win.
A 667 winning percentage in 3 years. It's a little bit more than an up and comer.
Yeah, that's a miss by John Ritchie.
That Matt LaFleur.
You would have hated.
He's got some moxie.
I don't know how John is on that show on IP. You would have hated him on Artie's show because he was just a he was wallpaper.
Did he just say, Diana.
No, he was not Diana. Chase Daniel.
Artie, Diana, what are we doing? Artie, what are we doing?
No, he was his role was to just sit back and basically nod his head and never speak as Artie Lang just went off on tangents. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. Jarrett Greenberg joined us last hour talking Cavs. Here's what he said about everyone calling out the team's toughness.
I'd be annoyed by it if I was on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, people just say it as a throwaway line at this point that the Cavs are not tough. What does that mean? What in what area are they not tough enough? Sometimes you're just not good enough, or sometimes the other team's better than you. You're using the same terminology and labels that you've used for the last 5 years on this team when it's a different group year in and year out.
I don't think mental toughness was the problem. I don't think physical toughness was the problem for the Cavs. You had four of your six best players playing through significant injuries. And even though Philadelphia, I think, was better at staying within the margins of physicality, I think the Cavs matched physicality better than they did in the Knicks series 3 years ago, better than the Orlando series 2 years ago, and certainly better than the Boston series, which is wild because that's not a physical Boston team. To me, if there's a question about toughness, we're talking about mental toughness. And that's, how do you quantify that? I don't know. Watch Indiana. They never shied away from a moment. Whenever things got the way things got, they never really caved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you call it. I don't know if you call it mental toughness. I don't know what term you want to use with it. But I do know in a must-win game, when you lead by 5 at the half, to then go 17 of 18 missed shots and 8 minutes of game time in the third quarter without hitting a shot, Nick, that's something that you need to find a way to, you know, be better at.
And I actually thought all the Cavs did a heck of a job of just being like, yeah, this wasn't what we signed up for. Like, I gave them
credit yesterday. I thought they owned it in a way that was impressive, because after the Boston series last year, I didn't feel like anyone really did that.
I didn't feel the lights were too bright moment. I didn't feel, which I think Jarrett said in like a tongue-in-cheek way, and then it blew up. I think he's acknowledged that since. Like, and I think they did, like, I think to a man, everyone was like, yeah, it's not about the injuries, it's not about this. We just didn't do the job. Odyssey NBA insider Danny Green joined Baskin and Phelps today and had this to say about the core four in Cleveland.
It's working. Obviously, you guys had a 60-plus game season. You just had a bad matchup. It looks like Indiana had beat you guys prior to the playoffs. You know, you got DeAndre Hunter later in the season. Ty Jerome also didn't play. No, it's just sometimes it's this way the cookie crumbles, right? Some guys have an off night. Some guys have an on night. They had a lot of things go right for them, and you guys had a couple of things go wrong.
It's not what I would do. I've said this, but I do think it is what's going to happen. I feel like Kobe Altman's going to do the same thing he did last year, and he's going to run it back another season. This is the roster he put together. I think it's really hard as a GM or a president of basketball operations to have a roster you put together that has been lauded, that won 64 games, and say something's broke. He didn't do it last year. I don't think he's going to do it this year.
I think in a way, the second apron ambiguity, the second apron, I think the ambiguity of who's going to be available, who's not, I think all those things actually favor in the Cavs. If the worst thing Kobe does is stand pat, I get it. Now that's going to lead to more questions going into next year, and there's going to be a how can you actually do it? Okay, don't care. If the worst thing you can do is no moves at all other than re-sign Ty Jerome, we're okay. But I also think you have to have every difficult question stemming from anybody that isn't Evan. And that includes Donovan, that includes Darius, that includes Jarrett. And I think you have to keep an open mind.
Have you seen what Ty Jerome cost, by the way, with the second apron?
Didn't Bobby say if he's $14 million a year, that means he's going to cost an extra $80
million? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Gilbert's got a lot of money.
Well, but what's the option is you lose him and can't replace him.
I get it, but think about that for a second. If you're Dan Gilbert, you're like, wait, so $14 million for Ty Jerome is going to cost me $80 million. How cool with that am I? He's worth $30 billion. He could totally eat the money if he wanted to. It just, is Ty Jerome going to be that much of a difference for the team? You can make an argument he will be, but that is unprecedented, the amount of money to take back for a Ty Jerome.
But we went through a lot of different possibilities. Maybe we will have to do what Anthony Alant suggested that we would do the trade machine version of Mock Me.
Yeah, but he didn't say he had enough trades ready to go.
Oh, no, we're not going to do that today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But maybe if we, like, I'm sure between him and Mac. The problem is, it can't be them generated. We've got to actually find other people submitting them and then go from there.
So yesterday I made the claim, and I want your thoughts on it. I think the second apron, if the Cavs stay in the second apron, it's good. It's not great for us in the sports talk radio business, because we can't even fantasize about Giannis coming here, about Booker coming here, about any of those guys that you Zion, any of those guys that you'd have the pie in the sky dreams for. You can't even do it because of the second apron.
What do you think about Jared Allen for Rui Hachimura and a first round pick?
There we go. Let's talk.
Let's do it. Let's jump to the Cavs, the Gardos, to close this out.
Let's do it. Guardians start a 3-game series with the Reds tomorrow. Are you looking for some revenge on Terry Francona?
Yes.
Wait. No, hold on. We had a big debate about how much you'd be keeping track of the Reds this season, because you said you wanted Terry basically to eat it. What is the Reds' current record right now?
I'm going to go there 21. And 19.
21 and 24. They're three games under 500.
I was so close.
You had them two games over 500.
Yeah. Well, no, but I got the 21 part.
You did. Right. You had the number of wins correct.
So I knew that.
Yes, you did.
Got that going for me.
Which is nice.
No, I jest a little bit. The reality is, I think Tito and ownership in front office just reached a point where Tito wasn't healthy. I'm sure that factored in. I'm sure he got frustrated with how things had gone a specific way after spending up until like 2018. Totally get it. At the same point, he waited 1 year and took a bad Cincinnati job. Like, that still infuriates me. Like, if he had gone to New York, I'd be like, I get it. Yeah, if he had gone to the Dodgers, or if he had gone to a big market team where they spend a lot of money and they have a I would get it. And
or if he went back to Boston or something.
Would totally have gotten it. He went to Cincinnati. So was it really a retirement, or was it just a year to play golf and wait for a job that he felt better about than the Guardians?
I think we know what it was. And I don't harbor any ill will. I am as invested into the Reds as I thought I would be, which is very, very little.
For now. Until this series. The lead brought to you by Slater and Zurs. Experience you need. Results you want. What do the Cavs do to get better from here? We'll ask that. And talk about the Cavalapse. Huh? Instead of a Cavalanche, Cavs Collapse, Cavalapse? You're right. It's not great. I'll do better. Joe Vartan in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.